This Sunday, I apologize. We are not going to go back into the Trials and Temptations series like maybe you had hoped to. Maybe I'll shoot Chris some sermons or whatnot for next semester that he can he can come back to that. I'm going to preach another message out of 1 Thessalonians today. And so when it comes to, we're going to talk about this idea of, where we tend to stray as Christians. I know sometimes we find ourselves over here where, early in our faith, I know this certainly happened for me, but we become really legalistic when it comes to how we go about following the rules and following this path of righteousness that God's called us to. And so part of that, part of this legalistic mindset is, we can't do anything, and we feel like any sin we commit, we feel like we're damning ourselves to hell, or we're throwing away our salvation. And so we try to live by the book as much as we can. And we can say that safely. That's what most Christians aim to do. But where a legalist stands, it's like they place judgment on others when they don't follow the same path of righteousness that they do, right? And so we begin to play this comparison game whenever we develop this legalistic mindset. And on the other hand, we might find ourselves sometimes like, you know what? To heck with the legalistic mindset. I know I'm not perfect, therefore I'm going to embrace my imperfections, and I'm just going to allow God to forgive me for all of my transgressions and my sins. And so sometimes we find ourselves in this place where we begin to just accept Jesus' sacrifice so freely that we begin to kind of take advantage of it, and we begin to just go our own way and make a God of ourselves, and we really forget our place on this earth whenever we do that. Right, so there's two extremes. We got kind of the liberty, the freedom of Jesus' sacrifice, and we take advantage of this grace that's been provided to us in our salvation, and there's also over here this legalistic one, right? And so we sway back and forth on this pendulum all the time, and I've seen myself in this side, especially my freshman year at Ozark, where, back home, I didn't have to worry too much about how I acted, how I presented myself. I was generally a better, well-put-together guy than most of my friends at the time, so I really didn't have to worry about that. But then I step into Ozark, and there's people who are way better put together than I am. And so I began to stand in this legalistic mindset where I was like, okay, I got to get my stuff together. These people are way more righteous than I am. And so I began to play that comparison game, right? And that was not fun. I did not like that experience. It made me super sad and depressed, and it had me questioning why I was at Ozark, and eventually I ended up getting over it, right? And then I found myself sometimes over here at the semester like, you know what, I'm just not even going to look to the people around me because I know where I stand with God, and He knows where I stand with Him, and that's all that matters. I can do kind of whatever I want. I know I've got the gift of salvation to hold on to Jesus' sacrifice, and so I'm just not even going to worry about it, right? So I find myself in that pendulum as well, especially with this journey through Bible college, and so I find myself questioning my salvation here on the legalistic side. I find myself taking advantage of the gift that Jesus gave us through His sacrifice, and so the question that we have to wrestle with, I'm sure we all find ourselves in, on this pendulum, is what's a healthy medium? What's a great place for us Christians to land on? What is something we can hold on to whenever we talk about trying to follow this path of righteousness? It's not the legalistic mindset. It's not taking advantage of the gift that Jesus gave us through His sacrifice. And I think this answer is kind of laid out for us here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. So if you guys want to turn to 1 Thessalonians, we're going to be in chapter 4 today. And we're kind of just going to run through verses 1 through 12 of chapter 4. In 1 Thessalonians. So this is going to be one of Paul's letters to the Thessalonian church. As you guys know, Paul writes a lot of letters to these churches, encouraging them and building them up, and instructing them really on how to live this Christian life. And we're gonna kind of see what Paul has to say. This is the bulk of what Paul wants the what he wants the Thessalonian church to get at this moment. So this entire letter of 1 Thessalonians, this is kind of Paul's instruction right here on what he wants the church to hold on to, and it's something that I'm going to bring to you guys today. So firstly, he's going to kind of introduce us to where we can land on this healthy medium. He's going to tell us, no, we don't want to be in this legalistic mindset. It's not all about the rules and following rules so as to stay righteous. And it's not also the freedom to do whatever you want. It's not the freedom to make a god out of yourself. But rather, he's going to land on a healthy medium whenever he says that in our pursuit of righteousness, we are called to please God. We are not called to please ourselves like we might want to do over here. We are not called to please others necessarily when we find ourselves in this legalistic mindset. It's not about how the perspective that other people put on you, and it's not about comparing yourself to other people. So it's not about pleasing yourself. It's not about pleasing others. It's about pleasing God. And we're going to see this in verses 1 through 2. So pick up with me in chapter 4, verse 1 and 2. It says, as for other matters, brothers and sisters, we instructed you how to live in order to please God, as in fact you are living. Now we ask you and urge you in the Lord Jesus to do this more and more, for you know what instructions we gave you by the authority of the Lord Jesus. Right, so right here, he's laying out for us the healthy medium. This is what Christians need to hold on to follow this path of righteousness to the best of their ability. It's not to sway from legalistic to grace all the time. It's to land on this fact that we are called to please God and God alone. Right, and so sometimes I found myself as a younger child, one of the worst things that I hated doing as a child was throwing up. I don't know, can anybody else resonate with the fact that throwing up just makes you feel gross? It makes you feel like you want to die. Like, that was how my childhood was. I thought that was the worst thing that a Christian would have to go through, to be sick and be puking their guts up. And so I found myself praying to God in these moments of weakness, and I found myself saying, God, please don't let me throw up right here. Please, I will do anything. I will read my Bible more. I will not sin anymore. I found myself just making these earnest prayers to God and basically begging him to deliver me from the situation I was in. And then I find myself 3 days later getting over the sickness, and the promise I made to him was very, very short-lived. And now I understand more and more what God was saying in the Bible when he said, let your yeses be yes and your noes be noes. And so I found myself in those moments where I just wanted to be delivered from that situation, that I made these empty promises to God. And basically, what that's to say, as it pertains to verses 1 and 2, when we talk about pleasing God, and we look at the story that I just told you guys, like, pleasing God should be an ongoing process. It shouldn't be a thing that you resort to when you find yourself in moments of weakness, like I did whenever I was a child. Pleasing God is an ongoing process. It's something we do in our highs, and it's something we do in our lows. I think we all tend to look to God, and we do a great job at looking to God in our lowest points, because we have a great hope in him and the salvation that he brings. But it's also just as important to remember him in those moments in life where everything is going great and God is with you, and he's providing you many blessings. Right, we talk about these seasons of life where God blesses us, and there's also seasons in life where God puts us through trials and temptations, and he has us wrestling with this, and it's all to bring about his glory and to bring us closer to him. And so these verses right here, it tells us that pleasing God is an ongoing process. It's a lifelong process. It's something we need to be persistent in no matter what season of life that we're in. And now he's going to lay out for us, he's told us that our instruction is to please God. And in these next verses, he's going to give us kind of three things to hold on to, three things that we can take with us as Christians on how we would go about pleasing God. Look with me in verse 3. It says, it is God's will that you should be sanctified, that you should avoid sexual immorality, that each of you should learn to control your own body in a way that is holy and honorable, not in passionate lust like the pagans who do not know God, and that in this matter no one should wrong or take advantage of a brother or sister. The Lord will punish all those who commit such sins. As we told you and warned you before, for God did not call us to be impure, but to live a holy life. Therefore, anyone who rejects this instruction does not reject a human being, but God, the very God who gives you his Holy Spirit. All right, in this big chunk of verses right here, we see the first instruction that Paul is going to give to the Thessalonian church. And these are all going to be issues that the Thessalonian church and even churches all around that Paul is writing to, these are going to be some of the things that they struggle with, especially when it comes to worldly desires, worldly temptations. And the first one right here is going to be sexual immorality. right? And so there's sexual immorality going around in the world, and obviously the church is called to completely go against it, to stay married to your spouse and be wholly devoted to your spouse, right? And so the world wants to take us one way, but the church is called to another way, and that's what Paul's kind of getting at right here. This instruction right here is to control your body, right? To reject impurity. That's his first instruction. And we can see sexual immorality even today. It's everywhere. I remember watching TV in my dorm room at one point in the semester. And I love Comedy Central. But if you know anything about Comedy Central, it's not always the purest display of entertainment. And so when you come to commercials, you often see some funny commercials, especially being at a Bible college. I find myself wanting to turn the TV off or turn it down or whatever the case may be. But a commercial came on that struck me when we're talking about this idea of sexual immorality and how it's promoted today. And it was a condom commercial. And so if you remember, 30 years back in 1990, Ronald Reagan in his presidency, he started promoting condoms to prevent the transmission of AIDS, right? That was a big thing back then. And so condoms were used as a prevention tool. They were almost used as a preventative item, right? Now, flash forward 30 years now, I look at this condom commercial, and one of the slogans that is being promoted is, the pleasure you want, the protection you need, right? It's crazy. In just 30 years, we've gone from taking a tool that is used for preventing disease to now a tool almost like an insurance policy, right? And so that's just how easily things can be manipulated and just taken advantage of as it pertains to this idea of sexual immorality. We see it everywhere in society. We see it in the media. And this is something that Paul would be instructing against the church. No matter what channel we may tune to, how much the world wants to throw sexual immorality in our face and say, this is okay, Paul is telling us here, it is not. And so this first instruction that Paul is giving to the church as it pertains to pleasing God is to reject impurity and to control our bodies. All right, now we're going to go into two more, and he's going to sway from this idea of things we don't do, and he's going to say, this is things you should continue to do, right? So I've laid out the first one, and we see in verse 8 that, or in verse 7 of this, that God did not call us to be impure, but to live a holy life. He would go on to say, even in this passage, that it's not about rejecting impurity for ourselves, so that we may not be blemished, but rather it's about rejecting impurity so as not to bring harm to a brother or sister, right? He's shifting the focus of our sin, not from the consequences, what it'll do to us, but rather to the consequences of what it'll do to the community, what it'll do to the body of believers, right? And now we're going to continue now in verse 9. It says, now about your love for one another, we do not need to write to you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other. And in fact, you do love all of God's family throughout Macedonia. Yet we urge you, brothers and sisters, to do so more and more, and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. You should mind your own business and work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders, and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. All right, right here, we see two more instructions right here. He kind of quickly goes through them, but he wants the church to continue in these practices. He wants them to continue in love for one another, and he wants them to continue to work and provide for themselves, basically, so that they would not depend on anybody. Now, he kind of makes note that these guys are really good at loving the body of believers and loving people in the community. They've got that down pretty well. As far as the work, I might have told you guys in the last sermon that I preached, this is going to be something that Paul is going to be hitting on a lot in the First Thessalonian church. I think I told you guys last Sunday that a lot of people, when they got a hold of this gospel message and the salvation that comes with it, they could almost just kind of throw away the rest of the world's practices because they know their fate is sealed, and so therefore, why do they need to live in the world or be a part of it? But Paul's calling them right here. He's saying, this is why you should continue to work. And Because if you don't work, if you just try to do like what the rest of the philosophers of the day would have been doing, standing out on corners, promoting this this message for a profit for yourself, you could essentially give up working, right? But that's not what Paul is calling us to, because people look down on philosophers of the day because, I mean, they were lazy. They went around promoting all this knowledge that they thought that they had, and people were suckers. They would come by and they would pay these people to obtain some of this knowledge. And so Paul's fear was that some of the Christians would begin to develop this sort of mindset, that the gospel message could be sold to people and that they could make a profit out of it. And if that were to happen, the gospel message would be illegitimate and it would just be taken advantage of and people would not like the church. And so he's telling them to work with their own hands, provide for themselves so that they may win the respect of outsiders. Again, he's taking the focus off of what it'll do to you if you work with your hands and if you love other people. He brings it back to what it'll do for the community, what it's going to do for the body of believers. He said, you will win the respect of outsiders. All right, so we've seen two instances right here. We've seen it's something that Paul wants us not to do, to reject sexual immorality, to reject impurity, and then we see two things that Paul wants us to continue in, to continue in love and to continue to work and provide for our hands. And now when we view all of these instructions in the scope of what it does to the community, we can come to the central idea that when we are out to please God, we allow others to see God in us, right? And so as we think about this in our own context, we live in a very individualized society. America is one of the most individual nations in the world. And what I mean by that is everybody is out to provide for themselves. We do very good at working with our hands. We wouldn't fall into the danger that Paul is addressing here in this letter. We wouldn't fall into the danger of trying to provide for our family and provide for ourselves, because in our culture, you work to be successful and you work to provide, and work has really just kind of been praised all throughout America. But I would kind of challenge us to continue to love and work and love, because I think love is something that we might have a little bit different than the Thessalonian church would have. And so this is all part of leading the quiet life. I feel like a lot of us here, especially, we like the idea of living a quiet life. But part of living a quiet life may mean to put down your political opinions and to just simply do the will of God and allow others to see God in us. I don't want to say that just to kind of throw away your political opinion. We all have our own. We all know kind of who we want to lead the nation, who we think that God is really trying to bring to power. But at the end of the day, we also just have to trust that God's got everything in his hands. He's got everything in control. And as long as we continue to live by his rules and not please the world, then God will be for us and we will begin to grow numbers in the kingdom and numbers here in the church.